In this week, on the 18th of October, 1997, rumours that the club would soon be relocating to the Republic of Ireland took the gloss off a 2-1 Premier League win at Villa Park, secured thanks to second-half strike from teenager Cole Court. Co-owner Kel Inbrook was quoted as saying, "We wouldn't have invested all this money unless we had a chance to compete with Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs with a comparable crowd and a stadium in Dublin." Dublin. I don't think so. I think we all prefer our home at Plough Lane, built by the fans for the fans. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Hello, hello, dear listener. Welcome to the Same Old Wombles podcast. We have got another special show for you because we do special shows every week. And this week, I'm delighted that we've got mon frère Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to see you, Matt.
Thank you very much. Good to see you too. Yeah, we've just come back from our big mum's 80th birthday. We celebrated it down in Margate. See, that's how posh we are. Also,
well posh, Matt. Well posh.
Welcome to our man with the buttons, the person who makes this podcast possible, Dr. Professor Adam Proctor. I'm giving you all the names. Hello, Adam. How are you doing?
I'll take them all. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Margate's cool. So I like Margate. I've been there a couple of times. So yeah, I'm excited to hear about Margate as necessary. And we had a reasonable weekend.
Yeah.
You guys missed it, but it was pretty... I liked it.
Good. So. Excellent. Thanks, Adam. We won't talk more about Margate. That's it. We won't talk about Margate. And the next guy here, the man with all the knowledge, the Wimbledon guru himself, who won't be talking about Cardiff, it's Tool Mark Lewis.
Hello, if you Mark. If you lot are going to bang on about Kent so much, then I'll talk about Cardiff as much as I want. Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. And good evening to our special guest who's about to be introduced. And sorry that you're last. I'm normally last, but this week you're last, obviously.
This ruins the hype.
This is headline.
Prior to the hype, our man with all the stats got a statistic wrong in the last episode. So I think he needs to correct how long Johnny...
Did I now? Okay, what was that? My apologies, but what stat did I get wrong?
The number of seasons Johnny Jackson has been with us.
That's quite true, yes. I missed out a season that Jackson had been with us. Yeah, it just like slipped my mind completely.
But that's how old you are.
I got messages.
No, I got told off. I did get told off as well. And then I got asked by two people on Saturday, are we your listeners, your two listeners? But lots of people keep claiming that they listen to the pod on a regular basis, including, without stealing Matt's thunder, the person who's about to be introduced as our special guest.
Our special guest.
Who told us that apparently he listened to the pod so much that he wanted to come on as a guest.
Which is ridiculous, isn't it? I don't believe it at all.
Because he realised. He was listening, apparently he listened to some of the other pods and realised that obviously there was only one choice of pod that you'd really want to go on. And he's going to tell us all about why we are so great, I think. That's what's going to happen next, isn't it, Matt? It's
literally only taken us 5 minutes of this baloney to get here. Good grief. I'm so sorry. But I want to introduce this man because I believe you played in the most important match in our recent history. That's my thought. I've always thought this was the biggest game in our history. It was the game against Staines, the playoff final. And I am delighted to welcome one of the key players in that game, the wonderful Mickey Haswell. How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you very much. Lots of questions and lots of things to respond to there. But I am paying homage to that day against Staines in my white Wimbledon jersey. And yes, I have listened to a few episodes and I found it really, really insightful and interesting. And thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. And how much was the check? What was the check? How much did we agree? Yeah. I can't remember what the fee
adds
was.
That's noughts at the end.
It's definitely not. The first round's on me. That's
What you should have introduced him as is the gentleman's LinkedIn profile, which I've just found. Senior procurement manager, former AFC Wimbledon player, fundraiser for the AFC Wimbledon Foundation. connecting business, sport, and positive change in the community. That is a wonderful way
that is
of introducing yourself. Yeah.
That I is think a the rest of us are all just going to give up now because there can be no one better than that, surely.
I love the fact that I've been given proper LinkedIn training and Mickey starts his LinkedIn profile with, I began my career on the pitch as a defender for AFC Wimbledon.
You can't beat that. Well, but also, didn't you
proper LinkedIn training? What do you do with LinkedIn training? Surely you just go, AI, please mark me a LinkedIn profile. Isn't that it?
Not exactly.
Oh, it's going to be one of these episodes.
We're going to pull it back.
Okay, but so, Mickey, can I just show you?
I've got to say one more thing beforehand. Yeah. Right. This is connected.
Yeah,
is that. As we know, LinkedIn. I've now boycotted Wikipedia because of the Ashley Hinks incident. Yep. However,
yes,
my photo from up in the balcony from the Staines playoff final is one of the key photos in AFC Wimbledon's Wikipedia page.
Look at that. It is connected. Mickey, what I'm just excited about is you've not just worn the white shirt, have you? You've actually got the one with your name on the back. Come on! And also,
there is a story to it, gentlemen. Yeah. And that was, I've celebrated quite a few special moments and milestones in my career and life at AFC Wimbledon. And I happened to spend my stag do, or bachelor party, as some of us call it, a couple of years ago. So it was the Wrexham home game, the first one of the season. So yeah. I was getting married in the August and I was dead set on having my stag at AFC Wimbledon. So we had to wait for the fixtures to come out and we'd kind of coordinated it. My wife was doing her hen do on the weekend that I was obviously having my stag do. And the gods were looking down on me because it just so happened that it was that game. And my brother got this done for me. So that's the story behind it.
Your brother got that done. Isn't that not the original? That's not the one you wore.
No, I do have that downstairs.
Yes.
Framed. That's framed up on the wall, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's excellent.
That Staines game is, I'll totally agree with Matt, it was the most important game in Wimbledon's history. I've no doubt about it. I've spoken to a few people. If you look at it, had we not gone up that season,
yeah,
it was right on the cusp, and that was so important. I absolutely loved it. I was on holiday at the time, camping nearby, so I'm obviously going, right, I'm just obviously going to go to the game. There's no way I'm not going. So I'm just like left. Obviously, the whole family. Off goes dad down to the Staines game. It was absolutely brilliant. And I've got to say, on the way back, I don't know why it was playing, but the Elvis song came on. And we were singing that so much that evening. It was just poetic. Definitely one of my highlights of the entire Wimbledon time. I've got to say, in no way were any of those goals fouls, just to clarify they were definitely not fouls.
I mean, it was for me, the one thing is it was lucky that the Staines captain was still on the pitch.
He should have been sent off.
After. Nicky, can I ask you, what do you, because I know it's all very nice hearing Niall's reminiscence of the game, what do you remember of it?
I mean, a lot of us were exhausted from the midweek game against Hornchurch. I mean, yeah. that was some game as well. Obviously, Maney scoring the winner there.
He did run from the halfway line, to be fair.
He did run from the halfway line, and he constantly reminds me of how far he ran. yeah, because Maney's wasn't renowned for his fitness and diet regimes, but he'll always remind me of how far he ran for that goal. But that really took it out of us, you know, the likes of Fergie, Maney, myself, and yeah, fellow centre halves. So we were pretty exhausted. And I think when we're kind of, you know, getting to the end of that game 1-0 down, we were thinking this can't be. And I think, you know, one of you guys just mentioned it there, that if we didn't go up, we would have been looking at a very, very difficult time for the club. And we pulled it out of the bag. And I just remember, I think it was Simon Bassey that was adamant that De Bolla should come on. Because De Bolla had joined us during the season and then went on loan somewhere because Brownie was... You know, we were gunning for promotion and there was a bit of a rotation system with a squad and players coming in and going. And it was Bassey that kind of wanted him back in. And I mean, him and Brownie will kind of argue it to this day that it was one or the other that kind of said, bring the bowler on. But, you know, the rest is history. And I just remember the goal going in and being absolutely exhausted, and the bowler running round the side of the pitch all the way up to the dugout. And I don't think I had the energy to do it. And it's just a picture of me with my standing still, with my arms aloft, just trying to build up the energy to kind of run over there. And eventually I did. And it was just mesmeric. And, you know, the celebrations after, I think we deserved it. And we had some good times in the aftermath of it as well.
And yeah, am I right in remembering that we had to go to Staines in advance to pick up the tickets? Because I'm pretty sure I remember queuing a week before or something insane at Staines to get the tickets. Is that right or not?
I don't remember going to Staines to get my tickets. That would seem a bit weird, but it was.
No, I do remember something weird like that.
Yeah, but I mean, it was
so weird, Adam.
It was a weird old thing. And I mean, the other thing, I guess you had Marcus Gale in the side as well. What was that like? I mean, I guess he was obviously a yard off the pace from his earlier days.
Yeah, but I think, you know, with his level of experience and expertise, you know, he can make up for that kind of degradation of pace. I still speak to Gailey now. You know, he's become the global ambassador at Brentford. So he's enjoying quite a lavish role, as I like to call it. He's travelled around with the club and the Premier League. And it was just great to play alongside him. He generally would play on the left-hand side of the centre-half. So he was kind of beside me. And, you know, he's constantly talking, constantly encouraging, coaching, and even does it now. You know, you'll find yourself talking to him, and it's just his natural style, just to want to guide and coach and help individuals. But yeah, really great guy. And I used to watch him, you know, when I was a ball boy at Wimbledon FC at Selhurst Park. So some special memories there as well.
Because that's right, because you started as a ball boy, and you were doing an apprenticeship. What was that? How did you get involved in that? Being the apprenticeship, how did that all come about?
So, I mean, many clubs, and they do it now, they have kind of centre, well, back in the day it was called centres of excellence, now it's academies or whatever else it's called. And they'd have, you know, academies at kind of each corner of London, up north. And I remember Wimbledon also had one up north. And I think that was the days with Martin Heather and Terry Burton, when they were involved in kind of the youth development. And I got picked up by one of those centres of excellence, probably around 9-10 years of age. And just kind of we got invited to be ball boys at Selhurst Park. And I was always one to kind of put my name forward first and get to the top of the list. And I did it several times. And I mean, I've got some fantastic stories from them days of meeting Fash and Vinny and Hans Sagers. And, you know, one of my old favourites, Alan Kimball, obviously being a left back. But yeah,
wonderful effort. Yeah,
beautiful culture. Yeah.
There's only one Alan Kimball.
No, there's only one Gary Elkins. Get it?
There's
right.
only one Gary Elkins. There's yeah. I was going to jump
Do
in.
You know the Gary Elkins song, Mickey?
Not a difficult one.
I don't.
It's basically it's the Winter Wonderland song. There's only one, whatever. But it's just like number one is Gary Elkins, number two is Gary Elkins, number three is Gary Elkins, etc., etc. You know. But so, I don't know why we chose Elkins, because he was like, what, third choice left back?
I have no idea. But what was, so come on, Mickey, give us a story. What was it?
Well, I remember my first time being ball boy. We kind of all met up outside and we got taken in, and we got taken into what I can only describe as a boardroom. And, you know, 9-10 years of age, quite small, this boardroom. It felt massive. It probably wasn't, but it felt massive. And this mahogany table, leather chairs, and, you know, there's probably about 10 or 12 of us. And we kind of, you know, it was just huge. And all of a sudden, the door swung open, and this what seemed like a giant came rushing in. And lo and behold, it was Vinnie Jones. And I won't repeat what he said, but he was, you know, seething, he was shouting, he was screaming, and these 12 ball boys were petrified, absolutely petrified, you know, to the point where some of us are hiding behind chairs under the table. I mean, it lasted probably all of 15 seconds and it felt like 15 minutes, but that was my first flavour of Vinnie Jones at Selhurst Park. And he did come back in a bit later to kind of smooth things over. And then when we were kind of getting ready to go out, we'd kind of walk through literally the dressing rooms and the tunnels. And those were the days when the music was absolutely blaring. And you'd kind of, you know, us young kids, some of us were kind of walking through hands over ears because the bass was just phenomenal. But
yeah, that'd be Philo.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of look back now and you think, wow. At the time, I think there was an element of fright and just sheer kind of petrified of the whole thing. But it was very enjoyable. And as I say, we got to do it several times. So I was very lucky in that sense.
Why was Vinnie Jones so upset? What had you done to him?
I think it's something that he did.
Oh, right.
I think, you know, he was always up for a laugh.
Oh, right.
Just wanting to cause fun and noise and whatever he could do. And I think he was quite renowned for kind of putting the fear in the ball boys. And then when he did come back, I remember this now, he would come back and then give you a few tips on what he wanted from you because he had the long throat.
Yeah.
So every ball boy would be given a towel, depending on the conditions, and he'd always say, make sure you do this, do that, and make sure the ball's dry when you give it to me, sort of thing.
Oh, that's cool. So you're in a way, you're
part
of the squad.
I can't imagine Vinnie Jones said it quite as politely as that.
No, he had, I mean, he still has, hasn't he? He's got that really husky, kind of just almost angry voice. And as a kid, when you're kind of listening to that, particularly when he raises the decibels, it was quite fearful.
But then, so you went from the academy. Did you get any game time with the academy or playing there or you remember from that age?
So I played at the Centre of Excellence on two different spells. So from about 9, 10 through to a couple of years, so 12, 13. And then kind of I went away and played at West Ham for a bit and Leighton Orient for a bit.
I'm sorry.
And then came back in my last year of secondary school. So what's that, 14, 15, I think it is. And that was when I was, you know, applying for a, what they called an apprenticeship or a scholarship. Unfortunately, I didn't get it. It was a gentleman called Sam Slomer, who you may know, who is a friend of mine these days. But he pipped me to the post, him and I'm not sure if I can say the name, but a Mr. Lewington that also got his apprenticeship.
Dream,
sorry, I feel so ill.
I know. I'm sorry, gentlemen. Just being transparent. Yeah. But just before that, we actually went on a tournament up in Newcastle. Because as I say, Wimbledon had a centre of excellence up in the north somewhere. And they took, you know, half of the squad from down south and half of the squad from up north. And we did. We went to a tournament up there. And that was the last time I kind of played for Wimbledon FC. And then just after that, I managed to get a scholarship at Southend Football Club.
Brilliant.
This is a random question I had. Looking at your history, Mickey, were you based kind of Essex way? Or have you always been? Well, I think now you're in London, but when you were growing up and so on, you were based that neck of the woods, weren't you?
No, I grew up in East London.
Okay.
So at the time when I was playing for the Wimbledon School of Excellence, it was just through the Rotherhithe Tunnel.
Right.
And then they had the other one that was, where was the old training ground where the first team used to train?
Richard Evans on Wimbledon Common.
It's Richard Evans.
Yeah.
There's a rugby team play there now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
So
I kind of tend every fortnight I'd go across to that one as well. But and that was traveling from East London. But in my last year of school, so a lot happened then. That's when my family relocated to Essex and then lived there for a while. And then kind of generally through Wimbledon, really became really acquainted with South West London and spent. God, just over a decade there until about 2 years ago when I moved to Hampshire.
All right.
Oh, and so you were in Southend, and how did that go?
It went really, really well. I had three seasons there. Did my scholarship. I was at college, so I was doing my A levels and got a couple of those. And in my third and final year was when Brian Little was the manager. And got sacked, and a new manager came in and just turned the whole club upside down from first team all the way through to, you know, reserve teams, development teams. And that was when my manager at the time at Southend went into the semi-professional football and took me with him. And that's when I found myself playing at Grays Athletic.
Cool. So from Grays, was it Chelmsford?
Grays, it was bit of time at Wingate and Finchley, but yeah, ultimately, yes. But my manager then went to Chelmsford. So Craig Edwards, you know, what I consider a footballing dad to me. You know, taught me a hell of a lot. Quite a character, very Marmite in the football world. Definitely mellowed in recent years. Yeah, he went to Chelmsford, and that's when I think I only had two seasons there. I think I won supporters player, players player, and managers player in one season. I thought I'd get that one in there.
And then left.
Well, how many awards did you win? I think we might have missed that.
Yeah, there was a few others, but not worth mentioning. And then Jeff King came in, and it just wasn't right for me. And thankfully, I got the call from Dave Anderson to come and check out Wimbledon at King's Meadow. And
wasn't that around the time when Wimbledon and Chelmsford were quite rivals? And Ricky Holmes was playing. I know he's gone back there now, but Ricky That's Holmes right. first time round was there, and he was a good player, obviously at that level. Why did he never play pro? I always wondered that.
Yeah, Ricky Holmes was great. Gosh, he would have been. I was 21 at Chelmsford, so he would have been 17, maybe 16. And I remember him. His debut for Chelmsford, and he was playing left midfield, and I was left back. But yeah, you're right, Mark. There was a bit of a rivalry there. You know, I think we came to King's Meadow first. And I always remember playing against, was it Daryl Plummer?
Wayne Plummer.
Who was an absolute handful. He was so strong, really physical. And that was a tough one for me. But I think if I remember rightly, I think Chelmsford beat Wimbledon at King's Meadow. And then the return fixture that season at Chelmsford was quite a flavoursome one. I think Steve Butler got sent off. Yes. Someone else got sent off. I had quite an unfortunate situation with Sweeney. He went in for a tackle with me and really damaged his knee, which was unfortunate. It was quite a big and good rivalry.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, and then in the summer, you made the move over.
Made the move over. I remember getting the call from Dave, and it's kind of, you know, one of those only fools and horses moments, you know, where play it cool sort of thing. spoke to my dad, and you know, with the affiliation that I had, the memories that I had, and the reputation and history and story that Wimbledon had, it was a no brainer for me. And you know, kind of played it cool and couldn't get down to King's Meadow quick enough to meet Dave. And I just remember walking in, and he didn't need to say anything. But I mean, I'm not sure how well you know Dave Anderson, but an absolute character, really nice guy. You know, did a great job for the club, a great servant, and I really enjoyed playing for him. And it was really unfortunate and sad that, you know, we didn't go up my first season with him. That unfortunate game against Bromley with Mr. Daly getting sent off quite early.
You haven't forgiven him yet either, then.
I do remind him quite often. Wes and I talk quite often. He doesn't live too far from me. We've got a few mutual friends as well, which we kind of find ourselves in similar circles at various times. One of those being Michael Harvey of the So Solid crew. Yeah. So we've played in a few. Well, I've played in a few charity games for Harvey, and Wes is generally involved in them. So we'll always have a bit of banter about Wes costing AFC Wimbledon the promotion in that year.
Was that a semi-final or a final, that game?
That was a semi-final,
wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, man.
That was the first time after those 3 years that we'd finally managed to get through the semi.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that so well. But was it a bit controversial sending off? Or was it like...
No, he was just fucking stupid.
Okay.
It's my memory of it.
Well, I think Mark's cleared that one up for us all.
Am I wrong, Ricky? I mean, you were there.
No, it's very diplomatic of you, Mark. But,
this is our guest on next, yeah?
No, I don't remember it, but... I think it was a rather silly challenge, if I remember rightly.
I love it. Oh, fucking stupid.
There you go.
And then, that's amazing. And then obviously the season after, because we were doing really well. And then Staines seemed to come from nowhere to nick that that second spot. And that was, who went up automatically?
Chelmsford, wasn't it?
Was it Chelmsford?
Chelmsford, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
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 And then, yeah, you could be playing for them, Mickey. Look what happened. But just that season was crazy. And the Hornchurch, I never doubted us at that against Hornchurch. What was your feelings on that one coming into semi-finals?
It was a strange season. It was a really tough season. Yeah. You know, every game we played was a cup final. It was such a ferocious league, and there were some good teams in it, but there was a lot of teams that were just fight, and that was hard. And I think, you know, we obviously were relatively consistent to be at the top end of the table, but there was also an element of inconsistency as well. You know, you'd go on a good run and then you'd kind of draw two, lose one before you'd win another one. You know, I've got some great memories of certain games, but by the end of the season, I think I was just shattered, because you were kind of giving it all every single game, which rightly so you should do. But it was physically demanding, more than I think I anticipated and expected. And I think even with the big squad that we had, it still took its toll. So I think if I remember rightly, I think there was a bit of nervousness. I think we kind of, the expectation was, you know, yeah, we were going up and we had to go up. And that was the bottom line. And I think we had good characters and strong characters in the change room to know that kind of we had to deliver. We had to do that. I always remember Mark Jones, just before the Staines game, sending me an Al Pacino video any given Sunday. And to this day, I always remind him of it. And inch by inch. And that has lived with me from that day. And I remember talking to a couple of the boys as well, particularly the defenders, going, you know, this is it. You know, we've got to cover every single man, every inch by inch, and we've got to get through this. And I mean, I can't remember the minute that we equalised in, but it was definitely kind of in the last 15 odd minutes. And, yeah, you know, we had that belief. I don't think it quite looked like it, because I have watched the game back and it kind of didn't look like we were going to win, in my view. But we just had that that mentality that it was going to happen. And I think, you know, the fans, more than anything, that extra push, that extra player, you know, never stopped singing, that sea of blue and yellow. It was just massive on that day. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll ask the question, right? Out of that, you obviously, you know, play in that kind of big push up through the leagues. What player did you think was the most talented? And then what player was the most, had the most character? So two different things. Who was the player you think, wow, that he was something special? And then who was the one that had the most character?
So most talented, I struggle to be unbiased here, because I always kind of, in my position, I've always was quite keen on building the right relationship.
What, Mickey Haswell, yeah?
No, or my left midfielder. So for me, that final season would have been Fergie or Finney. I loved playing with them too. You know, they had a lot of forward players forget their defensive responsibilities, and those two didn't. And they always gave me the freedom to express myself and get forward as well. So I had not only a great relationship with them, but I thought they were always responsible, accountable. And I think that's when kind of you want that kind of discipline from players. So I'd have to kind of go for them too. In terms of character, I'd have to say Stig, a.k.a. Luke Gerrard. I mean, he's obviously gone into management now, and I mean, I talked to him quite a bit. I've not seen him in person for a very long time, but he won't mind me saying this, he was an idiot. He was the clown. He was the clown of the dressing room, but he did it in such a way that it was magnificent. He was so funny. He had so much character and charisma, and he was a real team player. He really was.
Oh, brilliant. So did you think that Fergie or Finn could have gone on to, you know, play professional, or, you know, go further up leagues, or... Or do people, I mean, because I always think it's difficult, and I know it must have been difficult for you as well, because, you know, you've got a career, you know, because most people playing at that level, you're working and then you're training, what, two or three times a week, and you've got the game on the Saturday as well. So to make that commitment must be really difficult, because you'd have to give up a career as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, in Fergie's instances, I think he was coming the other way. You know, he'd been at Tottenham. And then I think it was Woking. So I think he was kind of coming the other way. Finney, I think to your point there, you know, he had a good job. I think he had a particular business interest in the property world, and that was quite lucrative for him. And it was kind of finding that right balance in terms of, well, finances as well as timings as well. And I don't think it kind of worked for him. So, you know, yeah, it really is difficult balance. And I don't think there was many, maybe a couple of the youngsters like Sam Hatton and Chris Hussey, that they didn't have jobs, probably fresh out of kind of college and that. But I think generally every other player had other commitments as well.
Is it a kind of itch? Has it always been a bit of an itch that you wanted to have been able to give it a shout at a professional level? Or was it just never practical?
No, I mean, always wanted to. And, you know, even I signed for Wimbledon at 21. And in my last season, I don't know if you guys remember, but that pre-season, I was on trial at Brighton. You know, I'd had a good season at Ryman Prem. And Brighton had been watching me for quite some time. And managed to get it. It did take some time and, you know, lots of paperwork, etc., to release me to go on trial. I think I was only meant to be there for one game and a few days training, which turned into 2 weeks. And at that point, you know, I won't go into too many details, but the conversations that I'm having with Wimbledon and Brighton were, in my view, at very advanced stages. You know, I'm picking certain elements in terms of living and contract where I'm thinking, this is a done deal. This is fantastic. And then, you know, there's certain things in my contract that Brighton felt were maybe overpriced. Myself and my agent at the time tried to kind of maybe, you know, change some of that and kind of make some concessions in certain ways that would benefit the club in the long run. But rightly so, Wimbledon said, you know, that's the clause. And if you want him, then you've got to kind of pay whatever's in that contract in terms of that clause. So it never happened. And I remember kind of sitting in the hotel on the day waiting for the final decision. And yeah, the agent came back and said, oh, I'm really sorry, but we've not got it over the line. Off you go back. And then I was training at Wimbledon the next evening. So, you know, of course, it was the dream. It didn't happen. I'm kind of one of those, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, that was it.
So was that Wimbledon putting the block in? Oh, my gosh, I'd hate to feel that.
It wasn't a block, and I'd hate that kind of that terminology to be used. There was a clause in my contract that Brighton weren't aligned with. And as much as kind of, you know, I wanted it to happen, contracts are there for a reason. And it was to do with the fee more than anything. Brighton felt that the fee was far too high for a non-league player at that moment in time. And, you know, whilst we try to kind of work it smartly, should we say, you know, can we lower the fee and do pre-season friendlies or other ways of kind of getting that revenue at some point in time? It was black and white, you know, it's this or it's not. And that was it.
Well, I've gone right off Brighton.
I now feel guilty about this.
No, I've got a Brighton had the money. They could have said, I mean, like, really, what's that about?
If they really wanted me, they would have made it happen. So, you know, I don't look back, and, you know, there's no animosity there. It's one of those situations. And I came back and we got promoted from the Blue Square South. And, you know, that was a fantastic season.
Yeah. What was that like? Because I know that, there was a bit more competition for place left back in that season. But do you have good memories of that first season? Because that was crazy. I mean, I had to go through it and to get promoted as well.
Yeah, that season taught me a lot about myself. You know, I came back from Brighton and tried to just kind of see past it and let it go. It was hard at times, but, you know, yeah. I was contracted to Wimbledon. I was dedicated to Wimbledon. And I wanted us to be successful. So if I remember rightly, I started the season really well, had a few good games. And I damaged my ankle ligaments in the game, which I think was at King's Meadow against Bromley. Quite a bad tackle.
Of course it was. It's exactly. Always Bromley.
And twisted my ankle. And then I was out for about, it must have been 8 weeks. And Chris Hussey, you know, took his chance. Very different player to me. You know, I don't think his defensive capabilities or responsibilities were to my standard, but equally his attacking prowess kind of surpassed mine massively. So, you know, it was that time where Brownie was adapting his style of play, wanting to play out from the back and, you know, wanted his fullbacks to get forward whilst kind of your holding midfielder was kind of pivoting and you know, allowing the fullbacks that freedom. And yeah, you know, I remember at Christmas time, Brownie pulled me in his office and said, look, you know, you're not going to play for me again this season. I said, well, what's the options? He said, well, you know, I'll put you on the loan list and you can go and find a new club. And I said, I'm really sorry, Brownie, but, you know, my contract is at Wimbledon and I want to see it out and I want to give it my all. And as much as you might not think that I'll play, I'm going to make sure every training session that I'm working my goddamn hardest to kind of give you a problem of kind of who you select. And yeah, look, for months and months, you know, I was traveling all over the South. I remember on a Tuesday night traveling to Dorchester and didn't even get on. I think we won 1-0 that night. You know, lots of games that was just turning up and not even getting on. I think I had a few cameo roles in the central midfield at times. I think Bassey once kind of said, look, stick Haswell on. He's got an engine. He knows how to defend. That's what we need at, you know, 80 minutes into the game. And then kind of as we got towards the end of the season when, you know, it was getting tough. And I think Brownie was looking for a solid back line, looking for experience and kind of looking for a team to kind of get us over the line. And, you know, if you look at the Hampton and Richmond game, and there was another one before that, he called upon me and I was ready for it. And, you know, I played my part. Okay, yes, I think I only lasted 75 minutes in that Hampton game. But, you know, he looked at me and I think that kind of gave me a bit of satisfaction that I'd worked so hard in the face of being told I won't play, I won't be involved. And I also remember to come back a bit the day he told me that, you know, I wasn't part of his plans. I think it's when we had a period of bad weather and we couldn't go on the pitch or whatever else. And at the back of King's Meadow, we had the running track. Yeah. And he said, like, you know, you don't need to train. I said, I do need to train. You know, I want to train. I want to show you that I'm dedicated and that I can still be valuable to you. And lo and behold, we were doing kind of time trials and races. And I did not lose a single race. And I came off and said to him, look, Terry, just give me a chance. And look, Terry and I, we still talk. We've got a good relationship. We meet up at Christmas. I'm trying to entice him to come to the We Are Wimbledon quiz as well. So I'm hoping he comes along to that. Look, football is football at the end of the day. And I think as long as you treat people with respect, both players and management, that you know, years down the line, that you can have these conversations and talk about them openly, transparently. And as I say, I'm not that kind of person to look back in jest or, you know, disgruntled. I don't know why Brownie was doing it. And I don't have anything against Chris Hussey. I talk to him every now and again through social media platforms and whatever else. It's part and parcel of life. And, you know, you want to guide people. You want to encourage people and you want to help people get along. And, you know, I'd like to think that I did that to Hussey as well. You know, at times I'd kind of have a chat with him and just, yeah, because he was quite young at the time, which in a way was a good thing because his mind was quite malleable. And it was kind of, you know, trying to tell him that what I see from kind of watching him as a fellow left back. And you know, he was always respectful of that. You know, a usual 19-year-old jumped up little start at times, but equally it's kind of, there was always that mutual respect, you know, being on the same team and playing the same position. So yeah, look, that last season was memorable for many, many reasons, some sad, but most of them really, really good. And as I say, it taught me a lot about myself in terms of resilience. And, you know, you joke about my LinkedIn page, but I feel that, you know, those 3 years at Wimbledon taught me so much about life itself, you know, from team building, team relationships, you know, working with individuals, managing individuals as well. And just, you know, just general life skills. And I've taken a lot of that into my professional career. And, you know, procurement is definitely one that harnesses those disciplines that I was familiar with and that I was taught and kind of helped me through my time at Wimbledon. And I'm hoping to bring a bit of that back now as well with some of the work.
I've got to say, Mikey, what you've kind of done here is you've kind of been like one of the most sensible footballers I've ever spoken to. And like, you know, you're on the Same Old Wombles podcast and it feels like, hold on, what's happened here? We've got somebody with like immense sense, real rational, kind of careful, well-considered stuff like that. This is going to ruin our reputation.
No, I have to say,
either that will lead you every week, Mickey. You know, so.
Yeah, it is amazing that bit of because I don't think we're used to hearing that from any footballer. You know, when footballers are looking back on their lives and someone's saying they were kicked off the team, it's just like, right, okay, I've decided I'd go somewhere else and I'd prove them wrong by going somewhere else. But the fact you stuck with it, and then at the end of it, you were, you know, like those last few games were key to us. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, at Hampton and Richmond game, I remember very funny, but that was a really physical. That was a really, really physical game.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, one of the things I had over Hussey. You know, I wouldn't look back and say I was a better player than him. I think, you know, at his prime of 2021, he was absolutely a better player than me. But he was different to me as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think, you know, that Hampton game was very physical.
Yeah.
Well, to the point where two of their defenders run into each other and knock each other out. And we
saw, which was hilarious. And I just got to quickly interject with my memory of that, because I was behind the goal there. And obviously I can see from everywhere because I'm 6 foot or something. But what I remember vividly about that is I had an old Nokia brick phone, and after that goal my old Nokia brick phone ended up in four different places. The phone was in the back of the net, the battery was somewhere to the left of the goal, the antennae was somewhere else, and the actual back of the phone was somewhere to the somewhere to the right of the goal, and like four different people after we'd all got up from collapsing in a massive heap because we were so shocked at seeing Maney score with his head. I managed to put it all back together again.
Oh, God, it was amazing. Well,
I was going to say, I think that's so nice to hear, though, because often when we look at particularly footballers at the top of their prime, we often think of them being individuals and just worrying about themselves, etc. And I think one of our strengths seems to be this current season is that we have a real good, solid team. Like, everyone is behind each other. And it's so nice to hear that, you know, in different terms, that, you know, it's a recognizing other players' attributes and bits and pieces, because there's so much pressure on what appears to be at the Premier League, at least, for people to be, you know, superstars, and that often revolves around the individual.
Picking up on your point there, Adam, do you feel there is something a little bit special about wearing the badge of AS Wimbledon because of our history, because of where it's gone, which makes it a bit different?
Is that for me to answer that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. No, Adam knows it. Obviously, we all agree. But, like, you know, just for you.
100%. I think some of my circumstances are slightly different to others in the fact that I've had a long-standing affiliation with the club. You know, having been ball boy, we also used to get tickets to go to games every now and again. And you know, my parents back in the day couldn't afford to take me to the Premier League game. So whenever we did have the opportunity, I was watching the Wimbledon game. So, you know, used to collect all the programs, and they used to have all the autographs, and you know, it almost became a second team for me way back
then.
He was doing
He was doing so well. Second team.
Transparency.
Unless AFC Wimbledon is your first team, this is going down.
Okay, let me cut that bit out.
Let me redeem myself now. AFC Wimbledon is absolutely my number one team now. And, you know, you'd ask my daughter, you know, she'd say, Daddy, you know, we support Wimbledon, don't we? Absolutely. You know, even in her school, she takes in the programs from the, you know, the games that she's come to. She's got she upgraded her shirt. So she's got the new Lotto shirt now that she was wearing at the weekend. You know, in this household, Wimbledon is our number one team. I've got lots of shirts that I've bought as a supporter, old playing shirts that are around the house. And you know, I think that moment where Brownie said to me, thanks, but no thanks. I think there was my affiliation. There was definitely a sense of pride, but I think it was more what the club and the fans had given me up until that point. You know, when you think about, or kind of when I look back on the story and the journey, and that's why I signed for this club. When Dave Anderson was talking me through it as to kind of what the ambition was, he didn't need to say much because I kind of knew where we were and where we want to be back. And I, from that moment on in, it was kind of, I want to play a part. I want to be on this journey with them. So I think for me, my circumstances are quite different to a lot of players, but I still speak to a lot of players, and I think they'd absolutely tell, you know, what's their memories. I think first thing they'd say is teammates. I think a lot of people that I talked to, particularly kind of from my era, it was about the camaraderie that we had. And to your point about Johnny's squad now, you can see it. You know, there's such a respect, there's such a camaraderie amongst that group of players. But I also think that it does kind of stop on the pitch, but there's a lot of else that's behind that as well. And I do try to speak to a lot of people around the club. I want to get to know the club. I want to know how it runs. And I'm really interested in the semantics of the club at this moment in time. And, you know, there's a lot behind the scenes to help that, to help the squad, to help what goes on the pitch. And I think, you know, since last year, we've all been pulling in the right direction. I think towards the end of the season, yeah, I was pretty concerned. You know, we weren't weren't playing well. We weren't getting the results that we needed. But for some reason, there was always this air of belief that, like, don't worry, don't panic. And I remember speaking to Riley Harbottle, Omar Bugil, and it was kind of like, don't worry, we've got this. And you kind of, as soon as, it was like a different team after weeks of kind of not really playing well. When we got into those playoffs, the confidence was just amazing.
Yeah, actually, the game I really thought was Grimsby away. And if you had listened to it, you probably remember me telling the story of that. But I went up there and spent a silly amount of money on a train ticket and booked it. Because I had tickets for the game and none of the rest of my family could go. So I went on my own. And there were people I was chatting to on the train, and we were obviously vaguely confident because we were going to the game. But I asked someone, you know, how confident were they? And they were like, you know, lower than, you know, some kind of grub on the ground because no one really had that belief. And yet we found a way to win that game. That's the game that Hutchinson scored that goal and then had a heart attack, as you do.
Yeah.
Or the other way around. And
it has a heart attack and then scores a goal. It's ridiculous.
That's the one. Yeah, exactly. And then just managed to roll on through with those binary 1-0 wins.
Yeah.
That game changed it. That game definitely changed it. That was a big game for us.
What got me is that I did not have that confidence. So maybe we should have had Riley and Omar on the pod.
I love that. Mickey, you were able to talk to him.
Mickey's like totally calm. Like, you know, fine, we have it. We had it. It was all sorted. I spoke to them. They're all sorted. We didn't have it. I was nervous as hell.
Actually, Riley's girlfriend was standing next to me at the Grimsby game. So that was a nice little thing. But I was just going to talk about memories. Did you get to go to Wembley for the playoff final, take your daughter there as well?
I did. I took Florence with me and... The last time I was at Wembley against Plymouth, I went with my brother and his best friend, who's kind of, you know, my friend. So this time around, bit of kind of superstition, I said that, guys, you've got to come with me. And this time Florence was coming. Yeah. So, yeah, managed to get tickets. And my daughter was just ecstatic. She was so excited. And I said to her openly, I think I did, with a tear in my eye, I said, that's one of my, and you're going to make me emotional now, but that was one of my best memories with my daughter. It was just from start to finish the most magical day. I mean, quite fortunate that, you know, people do recognize me from my playing days, and that's kind of not an egotistical comment, but from a perspective of just talking to lots of different people. You know, we get on the train and I met our old doctor at Wimbledon on the train, and we're talking to him. He was the one that kind of, I remember, giving me cortisone injections in my groin at one point. And my daughter said, well, what are they? I said, oh, we better not go into
that. Moving on, moving on.
And then just, you know, the Lonsdales, Jane and Richard Lonsdale and their boys. And they used to be they called themselves the Youth Till I Die crew, which, you know, at the time I was playing, a group of lads that were probably 15, 16 years of age that, you know, obviously adults now, and I still speak to them, and lots of people that I bump into and lots of people that I stay in contact with. And it's just that togetherness. And I think that's what Wimbledon has, you know, from the pitch to the stands, is that togetherness. And it was just a magical day, and was very fortunate enough to get into Box Park at the end as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of us had to get in there.
It's who you know, you see. We didn't have the right connections.
Exactly.
Even Trisha, our fabulous friend from the US, managed to get in there. We couldn't.
Yeah, we didn't get... No. I mean, we do this, but who knows? Anyhow, no, I like this. I like this all-togetherness and this sort of, like, you know, the bonding sort of thing. I'd hate to spoil it, but... come on, you've got to take someone for a pint, all right? Dave Anderson or Terry Brown?
Oh, that's a tough one, because...
On, which one are you taking for a pint?
Depends how many days he wants to lose afterwards.
Based on what I've said in terms of my story, I'm going to call out Terry Brown. I'd take Terry Brown for a drink. Number one, he likes a drink. Number two, he's a good chap.
Yeah. And what was it? What was that like working with Dave Anderson at the beginning? Was that, because obviously he brought you in, different sort of managers?
Yeah, Dave was brilliant, you know. very different managers. I'd kind of, you know, had a few chats with Dave after the games that Chelmsford had played played Wimbledon. So I kind of knew a bit about him then. But as I say, as soon as he called me, I couldn't get down there fast enough to sign. Yeah. Really great guy. And as I say, to this day, we kind of still catch up at Christmas, generally kind of message each other here and there. And sometimes we've coordinated watching the game together. He was commentating at the home leg of the playoff. And kind of, you know, had a catch up with him there. So really great guy. And yeah, Terry Brown was different. I think a lot more kind of success in the non-league world at the time that he came in, obviously with Aldershot and previous to that. But two great guys and two great servants for the club as well.
Yeah, they were the right managers at the right time, I think, in terms of where we were in our evolution or lack of evolution as a club. Yeah.
Just you'd prefer to go for a drink with Terry Brown, which is cool. That's fine. We'll just let Dave know next time we see him.
we also actually, Matt, at some point talk about the recent games.
Why would we do that?
For us, this is the recent game. The Staines game is the recent games for us.
but you can't talk about the recent game because, too, you weren't there.
So we were talking about that before you came on, Mark. What happened is that me and Matt in Margate for our mum's birthday. It was lovely. And obviously we're all sitting around there, loads of family all gathered around while my mum's holding court. And clearly Matt and I, being her sons, paying an awful lot of attention and in no way, both trawling for our phone, pressing refresh constantly. And that I was luckily behind my mum's back and was able to go 1-0 to Matt. And Matt was trying to have a conversation and obviously losing complete concentration. So that's we were trying our best to pay attention. It happened to be quite a significant birthday for a mum, but you know.
I'd just like to say
you've got to pass on to your own daughter, Mickey.
I'd just like to say if my mum listens to this at some point, I was paying attention to your mother. It wasn't me. I wasn't scrolling on my phone. I can be the good son.
Fortunately, my mother's the one person out of the Lewis household that doesn't do football whatsoever.
Dear me. Okay. So, Mickey, what's your thoughts on the season so far for AFC? What's your thoughts? You've been down to the ground a few times.
I've seen the Lincoln game. I celebrated my birthday at the Barnsley game with my family, and then I commentated on the Wickham game with Mikey T and Rob Cornell. So I've seen a few games. I mean, the Lincoln game. Yeah, they got someone sent off. It was a lovely sunny day and we capitalised on it. And, you know, since then, Lincoln are, I think, above us in the league, aren't they? So I don't think that was kind of a true telling of kind of what we could do. The Barnsley game, I thought, was great. And I'll come back to that kind of that camaraderie, but also that depth in squad. You know, I think when we started the season, I was a bit worried that we probably didn't have sufficient cover in lots of positions. And some still, I'm a bit concerned. You know, Steve Seddon on the left, who steps in if he's out. I know kind of Riley fills in a lot across the back. But we've definitely got some depth there, particularly the front line, which I think, you know, we definitely need. And I think it's paid off, really. Stevens is out injured. Orsi steps in and steps up and scores two goals. Omar, good to see him back in, kind of playing and starting and also getting a goal here and there. I think we look particularly strong and it's been really pleasing, other than the second half at Wickham, which was an absolute disaster in my view.
It's really interesting because with the defence, it looks really strong now. Because on the Port Vale game, and Mark, you were there, so I'd like your views on this. But obviously, both Johnson and Lewis are our mainstay centre backs, both missing. Bauer comes in, he gets a man of the match award. Harbottle comes in, he's not been there for a while. Oggs is now like sensational. And just a quick point on Oggs, because I think in the last podcast we said we were worried that Oggs wouldn't, you know, he needs to get a contract extension. In the week, he gets a contract extension. I put something up on socials saying, see that if we're worried about Oggs and we're worried about JJ. And Oggs has signed a contract extension. Mark, you go by that logic, JJ will be signing one.
Indeed, Nostradamus Lewis last week said that the best thing that can come out of Luton sacking their manager was that JJ could get a contract extension, and therefore we were either covered if someone came to try and poach him, or we wouldn't lose him full stop. And both of those things have come to pass. I'd love to say we had any influence on it whatsoever, and of course we didn't.
We do. We know the Don's trust this season. We know the Don's trust isn't.
This season's a lot of things have happened after we mention it on this podcast. And we've got to this point, so we need to start thinking about something we need to mention.
Bezo needs to sign up a longer-term contract.
Yeah, he needs like a triple contract or something, doesn't he, Bezo?
Anyhow, just going back, sorry, you got sidetracked. This happens all the time. So with what's your thoughts on the defence? I mean, because for me, that's amazing. We've got our best, what would arguably be our best two defenders missing. Bauer and Harbottle come in. It looks great. And it wasn't them that really made the mistake. What do you think of Mark? First of all, Mark, and then Mickey, what did you think of the defensive play on Saturday?
I have to say, going into Saturday's game, when you're missing two on international duty with Johnson and Hippolyte, and two injured with Stevens and Lewis, and then potentially I thought that we wouldn't have Hackford either, so it was looking at like five, and fortunately it wasn't five, it was only four. I thought we'd lose, frankly. I didn't want to lose, but I thought, frankly, that would have been one step too far. The one step too far, because Mickey's right in terms of the strength of the squad. Because you've got, what, five, six defenders potentially to play in that back three. Hutchinson still untested. Every time we test Hackford, he seems to come through really pretty well, to be honest. Omar's played a number of games and has done particularly well, but equally, can he keep on playing five, six in a row? I don't know. But actually, even though we had a weakened team and not huge amount of options to be able to bring off the bench, I got a text before the game from somebody that we all know well, who will know who he is, so I won't mention him, who said basically the bench is full of players that we don't want to come on, or words to that effect. Because they're all too callow. You know, the likes of Delano McCoy-Splatt, for example, can come in, but is he the right person to come in with 10 minutes left and we're trying to hold on to a 1-0 lead? And in the end, it was just a very unfortunate slip by Alistair Smith. He's had a great season, that gave them the opportunity. And they, Port Vale gambled big time. They had four centre-forwards on the pitch in the last 5 minutes. So if they hadn't got that, we would have broken on them, and Hackford possibly would have scored a second goal and we'd all go home happy. We didn't play particularly well. We didn't create particularly much. We look, without Hippolyte, slightly bereft in midfield, if I'm completely honest. And Orsi had one of his games where, if he's not fox in the box, we're not creating anything, you think, is he really on the pitch? And Hackford really is creating a really, really positive impression. And I'm looking at the interview he did in the programme for Saturday. I'm thinking, is he really only 21?
Yeah, incredible. And Mick, what are you making of our back line?
Oh, it's an enjoyable to watch. I think that the depth in strength is fantastic, and you know, to the point there where we've got two players out and they step in, and we've got, you know, a solid performance there. I think to see Oggs sign a contract, I think I was questioning that a few weeks ago. So that's really positive, as well as Johnny Jackson. And great to see Bauer. I mean, I've seen him a couple of times come on a sub. Looked a bit kind of heavy, looked a bit slow. But, you know, from what I've read from the weekend, he's walked away with man of the match. So, you know, he's definitely kind of got a few minutes under his belt. Obviously, he's been training and, you know, I'm sure his fitness has come on and he's match ready now.
He's not quick, but he's just solid. I mean, someone like Richard Wood played for Rotherham, played 500-odd games in the league, in the Championship and in League One. So I think Bauer, and obviously Jackson knows exactly what Bauer can do, because they played together at Charlton a few years back.
Yeah.
I would say, of course, you don't want to play without Lewis or Johnson, but if you therefore have to do it, I read today someone saying Johnson and Lewis might struggle to get back in the team, which I think is a bit of a stretch. But Bauer would be disappointed if he was dropped. And to be fair to Jackson, you know, Oggs was the one that kept getting dropped last season. We could never really understand why. And now he's forced his way into the team to the point where Harbottle is like the spare part, which is really unfair because he's a really good player and he never lets anyone down when he does play. But I'd certainly say Bauer should play. And if they therefore have the opportunity, because I know that Lewis's injury is a little troublesome by the sound of it, with his ribs, if they can therefore give Lewis a little bit longer to be able to properly recover... Yeah. Because Bauer is actually match fit, as Mickey says, so much the better.
I quite like the fact that Matthew asked you guys about the game and forgot that I was actually there. It's fine.
No, no. I was talking. Adam, you've got to give me a chance. I was talking to them about the defence. I was going to come to you about the attack, but to be honest with you, I'm not sure we have enough time for you to bang on about Bugle again.
No, I'm not going to bang on about Bugle. I'm going to bang on about Ogundeir. Like, he, there's moments in that game where he's literally punching the air from, because he's so excited about the fact he's managed to do a great defensive clearance, etc., etc. He is blowing my mind at the moment, and I'm so pleased that he signed a new contract. He was a force to be reckoned with. It was great. Yeah, and I think Orsi, who I'm obviously you guys are less excited about, obviously. That was a difficult game for him. He didn't really come into the game, which was a bit disappointing. So it's a bit like Mark says, it's kind of one thing or the other, which is a bit disappointing. Bugle obviously was awesome. You can't do anything wrong anyway.
Adam is the Omar Bugle fan club president.
Because he's blooming awesome, that's why.
Mark, my daughter's in that camp as well. So Adam, you've got a colleague, and I'm not far behind, I have to say.
I've got a question, because let's say we've always said this: it's, you know, Brown and Bugle are in that position. That's the position there.
No, but then they were playing together at the start of the game. That was the thing.
Yeah, I think Harbottle is that, not Harbottle, Hippolyte. That's the position. So then you have Brown and, but now we've got, say, like you had those three positions. You've got Stevens, Orsi and Hackford. I mean, out of those, who would you start with?
I'd start Hackford every day and twice on Sundays.
I mean, Hackford was pretty amazing when he came on. That is true.
The thing about Hackford is, even when we were defending, and actually in the end, he didn't give the ball away. He just played a simple pass, which Smith unfortunately miscontrolled. But when Hackford was on the pitch, he was genuinely staying in the halfway line. And we were always screaming, leave someone up at a corner or a free kick when we're defending. And they therefore left two, if not three, back. But they had some real brick shit house centre-backs. But if Hackford got the ball, they knew, and Hackford knew, and the whole crowd knew, that he would have outstripped all of them.
Yep. Oh, it's fantastic. Listen, it's great. And we move on now. I just need a little bit of news before we end. So the FA Cup draws happened. And we are at home to Gateshead. So that's going to be a big TV game, I guess.
You know the teams we could have got, right? So we were like down to about the last 12 teams before we were drawn out. We could have got Truro City.
Oh.
We could have got Maldon and Tiptree. We could have got Walsall. How exciting. Yeah. We could have got Macclesfield. We could have got South Shields away, which is just as bad, but now we've got Gateshead, who are 16th in the National League.
Yeah, I mean they're going to be really up for it. It's going to be like Dagenham Redbridge.
14th in the National League.
Really, really tough game. Oh.
Well, apart from the fact that in 14 games they've won two, drawn won five, drawn two, lost seven, scored 22, conceded 32. They have conceded more goals in the National League than everybody except Morecambe, who are bottom, rock bottom.
How much of a bruiser team are they? That's the problem. Are they going to like injure our players by just like killing them with two-footed tackles? That's the worry, isn't it?
Mickey, what do you know about Gateshead? Anything?
I can't comment, I'm afraid. Other than, I think, to your point there, it'll be a pretty harsh battle for us, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's going to be tough. Well, anyhow, it'll be another game to get along to. It's exciting. It's not going to be on the box, is it? Let's face it, that's not going to be one they put on the telly. And the other bit of news is, and I thought this is quite funny on social media. I don't know if people have been following Matt Locke. He's been doing a knockout competition to find the all-time. And I'm sorry about this, Mickey. He's been finding the all-time AFC Wimbledon hero, and it came down to Jake Reeves and Taylor. God, I've gone blank for a minute.
Lyle Taylor.
Good grief.
Baby.
There's so many Taylors in my life, in a Wimbledon life. So, yes, and it became down to Jake and Lyle Taylor. And who would you have picked?
Thieves.
I would have gone Lyle Taylor, I think.
You'd have gone Lyle Taylor, Mark?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw the sort of like 32 that went all the way down to two there, yeah. And there were certain people I wouldn't have left out, you know. Yeah. I wouldn't have allowed to get all the way through, so to speak. I was surprised, with the greatest respect, that Reeves got to the final two. But yeah, out of those two, definitely Lyle Taylor, baby.
Really? That's interesting. Professor Proctor?
I go for Reeves now. I think he's so solid, and I like that.
Reeves is just my kind of a player.
Yeah. I'm very surprised, Mark, that you went for Lyle Taylor, baby, over Jake Reeves.
Yeah, look, Reeves is a good player and has been a good player in three incarnations. Whether or not, you know, we're necessarily seeing peak Reeves now, I'm not sure, but he's certainly got Smith and Hippolyte to do a lot of running for him. Yeah. And when we play well and he's on the ball and he's dictating, then it works well.
I think my question is, when you're playing Reeves. We are definitely seeing peak Reeves. Come on. Like, he is on it.
I think Pete Reeves was Plymouth and with Danny Bullman in that playoff final.
I'm not sure about that.
It's brilliant. It's fantastic. Sure, surely though, and you know, Nick, you must know this, the working in business, the best thing you should do is to delegate to get other people to do your work. So if Reeves is managing to get other people to do the work, that's Pete Reeves, surely.
It's a team game. It's not an individual game.
So,
he gets the best out of
it. He's at the heart of our team.
Absolutely. Middle now, of our team, to be accurate with the song.
I'm going to start winding this down, because it usually takes about three goes to end the flipping podcast. But I wanted to just say, Nicky, thank you so much for, you know, all you've done for Wimbledon. I mean, like we say, you played in the most important game for us. And now you're doing some great work, but also a lot of charity work as well. Am I right? You're doing loads of stuff for the foundation. Cycling? What else have you been up to?
Yeah, no, look, thank you very much for having me, guys. It's been a real joy, and appreciate the opportunity to come on. And yeah, I've been kind of involved in the foundation for about the last year. Met Paul Munro a little while ago, very infectious personality, and kind of, yeah, just got involved and believe in kind of, you know, what we're doing in the community, not just on the football front, but, you know, all of the other stuff that we're doing, which is great. I'm really kind of making some change. And I want to be a part of that. I want to give back to the club. I want to give back to the community. And I did a cycle ride last year. We cycled from Plough Lane to Gillingham. We raised over £15,000, which was great. We'll be doing the same again, probably around about March time, TBC. But I think we've nearly confirmed which fixture that we're going to go for. I want to recruit more cyclists this year.
Good luck.
I want to smash the target.
Right. Don't look here.
Come on, girl. I'm sure I can get one of you. I'll work on you.
That is true.
Stockport County is in March. That's quite a long way, Mickey. Stevenage, I'm guessing you do. March the 14th.
We'll go for 50 miles. So, yeah, read what you want into that, but you're not far off.
And obviously you're coming to the pub quiz.
I'm coming to the pub quiz. Yeah, you know, big, good fun. I've managed to get Maney and Judgy to come along. Funny you asked me
that. There'll be no beer left then.
There'll be no beer left with judges there, absolutely. But it's funny that you asked me that question earlier about who would I go for a drink with out of Brownie and Dave Anderson. I've asked them both to come, and I'm waiting for one to respond. So whoever gets in there first. Whoever gets in there first, I might be changing my answer. Who knows?
who's in our
I
team?
I really, really hope it's Dave Anderson who's there.
Absolutely. Otherwise, the same old one was going to go down, aren't they? You know
who we prefer to be here, don't you, mate?
Yeah, looking forward to it. It'd be good.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Oh, thank you
so much
for
coming
joining.
On here.
Yeah.
Obviously, challenge dupes. Challenge Stacey, so Stacey will have a team.
Yeah.
What we are looking at is a penalty shootout with the same old Wombles versus Stacey five. He will be on the recruitment at the pub quiz to see who could be in his five. So, you know, we might put an early call in to say whether you join our five, but he might be doing that as well. So that's where we're at.
What do you mean might put an early call in? We have put an early call in, surely. We need someone with some football ability, which is why we asking Mickey to be involved because we haven't got any.
Mickey could be a
hard enough for it to actually get past the goalie, for goodness sake.
Put your offer contract
really...
in the post, and I'll think about it.
Depending on what clause is in there, as to whether
they'll
let you.
Hey,
that's probably what it was—the clause, wasn't it? It was the clause. Do you take penalties?
Yeah. I think we need a goalie between us as well. Yes, you've got to get on that. We've got to sort that out. And what we'll do is we'll put something up where you know. You can either contribute money depending on who wins or who scores. And I would put a lot of money on if Adam scores. I think that's where you need to do it.
That's harsh.
No, he's put himself in there.
We do have a Seymour Wombles team in the pub quiz, run by Mick Dore, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, we're in. We're in.
I say we do. I know we do because I'm the one that organised it. So
yeah.
So you will owe me a pint.
Yeah, don't worry, mate. It's there. thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you, my friend Al Cooper. Thank you very much, Dr. Professor Adam Proctor. Thank you to Mark Lewis. And thank you very much to our special guest, Mickey Haswell. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, my friend. And we will see you soon. My name's Matt Cooper. We're the Seymour Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. Under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth.